Unlike our previous guest, Paul Krugman, Bruce Bartlett supports President Bush's tax cut plan. Bartlett is a syndicated columnist who's published in The Washington Times, The New York Post, and The Detroit News. He's a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis, and he was an economic advisor in the administrations of President Reagan and the first President Bush. The president proposed steep tax cuts when we had a budget surplus, and now he's proposing deep tax cuts now that we have a huge deficit. Do you think his rationale for the tax cuts has changed?
No, I don't think so. I think that the things he has proposed in his budget for 2004, which is the one that was just proposed in January, are really more thought of as fundamental tax reforms than stimulus measures. Stimulus measures would only be justified under the conditions of a very deep economic downturn. But fundamental tax reforms, I think, are justified under any circumstances, even if the economy were growing 10% a year and we had, 1% unemployment. I still think that many of the things that the president has proposed, such as eliminating the double taxation of corporate profits, increasing incentives for individuals to save for the future, I think these are things that are always justified because they raise the long-term growth rate of the economy, raise productivity, and thereby raise the standard of living.
Now, you don't think that this is meant to be an economic stimulus, but hasn't President Bush said that it would be?
Well, he sort of talks around it. I think that there's no question that he's trying to use the current economic difficulties as a political, opportunity to get some things passed that perhaps he would like to have done under any circumstances. But I don't think he's really emphasized the stimulative impact of his plans so much as the just the rightness of the policies.
The critics of the Bush administration say that his tax plan is a plan to benefit the rich and not really help the poor or the middle class. Agree? Disagree?
Well, I think if you look at tax policy just in terms of how people pay taxes, that may be a justifiable position. But if you look at tax policy in terms of changing people's incentives and changing the economic conditions of the economy, then I think it's not. Because higher saving and higher investment, which quite frankly has to be done by the wealthy because they're the ones who have the ability to do it, they're the ones who have the ability to create jobs and do the investment, I think that the ultimate beneficiaries are really the poor and the middle class because it leads to an increase in the number of jobs, an increase in productivity, an increase in wages, so that the ultimate beneficiaries, I think, of higher investment and saving are really the poor and the middle class.
Say, though, when the corporations make more money because of the new incentive for investment, they decide to keep a lot of those extra profits instead of creating more jobs.
Well, the money has to go somewhere. I mean, if they keep the money, they either have to do one of two things. They have to pay out in dividends, and the president is proposing a policy that will encourage them to pay out more dividends that people can then reinvest. Or they have to invest the money either in their own productive capacity, or they have to buy stocks or bonds or something else. The money just doesn't sit in a mattress. So the money will be saved. It's the aggregate amount of national saving that really matters in terms of our ability to increase productivity, and it doesn't really matter how that is done.
How do you justify cutting taxes at a time when we're already facing a huge deficit? Cutting taxes means the deficit's going to keep getting bigger.
Well, I think that it's a question of how can you rationalize not making an investment in America's future simply to maintain balance in the federal budget when all the evidence suggests that that the money would simply be spent by Congress on pork barrel projects and lots of things of no particular value to the nation as a whole. So I think that the premise that if we didn't cut taxes, then the deficit would be lower by an equal amount is just not a valid premise. The Congress would simply spend the money.
The premise of your answer is that any money that's spent is going to be on worthless pork barrel projects. But isn't it true that Homeland Security isn't adequately funded and that the future of Medicare and Social Security are in jeopardy because the deficits are going to be so high and they will be growing even higher at a time when the baby boom is retiring? And a lot of Social Security and Medicare is supposed to be paid out then. Who's going to handle all of that? And what's that going to mean for the future generations?
Well, I don't see any evidence that Homeland Security is underfunded. I mean, you can always spend more on such things. There's no limit to how much you can spend. You just have to draw the line somewhere at what seems to be reasonable, and I think that the administration's approach to this is reasonable. As far as Social Security and Medicare are concerned, I think that those are two programs that are fundamentally unstable and do need to be fundamentally restructured. But I don't think that. But I think one of the best ways of allowing us to carry the burden that those programs impose upon us is to have the fastest possible economic growth. And I think that increasing the total size of the economy by lowering taxes in such a way that will encourage faster economic growth is probably the best thing we can do today that will make those problems more bearable. I don't think one's a substitute for another. I don't think that just running large surpluses today really makes those problems go away, because their problems are so great, they're so large, that you would have to run, you know, massive surpluses year after year after year after year to be able to pay the promises that have been made in those programs, which simply cannot be funded. They have to be restructured, and anything that puts off that day of reckoning, I think, is ultimately not in the public interest.
You said that there's no real evidence that Homeland Security is underfunded. A lot of critics say that it has been, and also many states are complaining that they just don't have enough money to do what they think needs to be done for Homeland Security on the state level, and they don't feel like they're getting anything close to adequate help from the federal government.
Well, look, the states are whiners. They always complain that they never have enough resources, and that is true whether times are good or times are ill, and was true before September 11, and it's true now. The evidence is that when times were flush, the states grossly overspent, or at least some of them did, on a lot of wasteful projects that were designed mainly for the purpose of ensuring the reelections of the politicians in charge of those states. And of course, anytime they can get the federal government to pay some of their expenses for them, they're going to say that's what they need. All I can say is that I think you just cannot take these things at face value. You have to look at them very carefully and evaluate these needs in terms of, to the extent that they are over and above what the states would otherwise have to be responsible for. And I think that they're always looking for a handout from Uncle Sam and a way to get the federal government to fund the things that they otherwise would be funding anyway.
Many states are in real bad economic straits right now. And at the same time that they're trying to develop new Homeland Security projects, many states are cutting things ranging from education to the arts to funding for welfare, funding for Medicaid. And a lot of critics of the Bush administration economic plan say that it's likely many states will end up raising their taxes in order to stay above water, and that those raises in state taxes will compensate for any benefits that the middle class has gained through President Bush's tax cuts.
I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, there was a case just recently in Oregon where they had a state referendum on do you want us to cut state spending or do you want us to raise taxes? And Oregon is not what you'd ordinarily consider a conservative state, and the overwhelming vote was to cut spending. So I think that what got these states in trouble is during the economic bubble of the late 1990s, when times were flush, they spent way more money than they should have spent, and now they're paying the piper. So I think that bailing them out is really unfair to those states that were responsible and kept spending down and didn't greatly increase spending just because they had a temporary increase in revenues. And those states are very much in doing just fine.
Several historians have pointed out that it's unprecedented for the United States to cut taxes as it faces war. Usually taxes are raised in time of war. In fact, that's how the income tax was begun, to help pay for war. Do you have any reservations about cutting taxes at the same time we're facing war with Iraq, an expensive one?
No, I don't. I think that the wars of the past and the wars of the future are so radically different, there's really no comparison. I think that the wars of today are fought much more by professional soldiers using high-tech weaponry that is already in existence at the time the war breaks out, and we don't really have the need for mass mobilization, for building thousands of tanks and thousands of airplanes, as was the case in World War II and Korea and to a lesser extent in Vietnam. I think that today the high-tech weaponry we have is able to do multiples of the kinds of damage that previous wars' weapons did, and I think our soldiers are so well trained and so professional. So I really think that the main thing in terms of fighting future wars is to be extremely well prepared before the war even begins. That is to say, all the spending on the war comes long before the actual outbreak of hostilities. And I think that was true in the Gulf War, and I think that's true in this war.
So you don't think we'll have any problem at all funding war with Iraq and the rebuilding of Iraq?
Well, I wouldn't say no trouble at all, but keep in mind that one of the problems with Iraq right now is that United Nations sanctions have severely limited that country's oil output. And under a democratic and free Iraq, even though some considerable damage to their oil industry, I think that new investment and improvements in their technology and elimination of sanctions would allow that oil output to increase several times, perhaps from 1 million barrels a day to 3 or 4 or 5 million barrels a day. And I think that will provide more than enough revenue to allow Iraq to rebuild itself without the necessity of a huge amount of foreign aid from the United States. And I also think that our allies will undertake a great deal of the burden of peacekeeping in that country. So I think our main job is regime change, and I think that the economic costs beyond that probably won't be nearly as high as most people think they will.
My guest is Bruce Bartlett, a syndicated newspaper columnist and a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bruce Bartlett is my guest. He's a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis. He's a syndicated newspaper columnist. His column is carried in the Washington Times, New York Post, and Detroit News. He has served as an economic advisor in the administrations of Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. You said earlier that one of the reasons why you support the president's tax plan is that you think it's basically a restructuring of the tax code. How do you think the code should be restructured? Like, proportionately, do you think that the wealthy are paying too much taxes, and do you favor a progressive tax? Like, what is the right proportion for the people in the upper bracket to pay?
Well, what I think is we ought to structure our tax system towards taxing consumption, because I think that that's a better measure of what people take out of society, and get away from taxing saving and investment, because saving and investment add to the economic pie, and even though the people who make the saving and investment get a return on that investment, most of the returns go to people that they don't have anything to do with. That is, the workers and people of that sort who are employed and have wages from the investments that are made. So I would like for us to get away from taxing saving and investment and moving more towards a consumption-based tax system. And I think that's the most important reform we could possibly make. And I think that the president's proposals move us in that direction by getting rid of the double taxation of corporate profits, moving us towards expensing of corporate investments, allowing people to save more without having to pay taxes on the return to those investments. I think these are all incremental movements in the direction that I would like to see the country going.
A lot of experts say that consumption tax is always much more difficult for the poor and the middle class than it is for the wealthy. It's a tax that's skewed to favor the wealthy and hurt the poor and middle class. Also, if you're taxing consumption and you're making it that much more difficult for the poor and the middle class to afford the things that they want or need, can't that hurt the economy because it's an anti-stimulus? It makes it harder to buy things.
Well, that would be true if you were talking about a traditional type of direct tax on consumption, such as a retail sales tax, such as those that we have at the state and local level, or a value-added tax, such as the Europeans have. What I'm talking more about is something that economists call consumed income tax. Think of it this way. There are only two things you can do with your income. You can either save it on the one hand, or you can consume it on the other. So if you eliminate taxation on saving, you have per se a consumption tax. But you can still have progressive tax rates if you want to. You can still relieve the poor through exemptions if you want to and still have high rates on the wealthy. And it doesn't necessarily have to be more regressive. What it would do is that it would reward those people who save and invest at the expense of those people who go into debt and who live beyond their means.
Critics of the president's proposals to change retirement accounts, which and this would include being able to put more money into retirement accounts without paying taxes on that money, and you know the limit, the ceiling for the amount of money you could put into those retirement accounts would be raised. Critics say that that's a really nice thing for people who can afford to save more, but that most people are barely saving anything, and they can't afford to save any more than they already save. So giving them incentives to save more by decreasing the taxes on those savings isn't going to mean a thing for those people who have no money to save in the first place, which is a lot of people.
Well, one reason why people don't have as much money to save as they would like to have is because they pay so much in taxes. So it's sort of a chicken and egg problem. Now, I think that a lot of people, if they had the thought that they could get tax-free retirement savings, as the president has proposed with his savings incentives, I think that they could save in lots of ways more than they do now. I mean, people in impoverished third world countries, in some cases, save more than many Americans do. They're simply reacting to the incentives that they have been given in terms of our tax system. So I think that a lot of it is incentives, and you want to encourage people to change their behavior and not go into debt so much because there would be more benefit to them from saving. So I think that it's sort of a chicken and egg problem, and I think the president has proposed a reasonable way of trying to move us in the direction I think we'd all want to go.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Bruce Bartlett is a syndicated newspaper columnist and a senior fellow at the National Center for Policy Analysis.